First to China. We may not be expecting a jasmine revolution in the near future, but what about down the track? Is the strengthening of Xi Jinping all about inherent instability?
The structure of the state. 3,000 delegates from all over China will gather at the Great Hall of the People in Beijing. In theory, they're meant to thrash out and approve policy for 2018. But the reality is that delegates are hand-picked by the Communist Party to enforce decisions already taken. The two-term presidential limit was put in place in 1982 by Deng Xiaoping, to ensure the chaos of the Chairman Mao era would not happen again. Mao's great leap forward in the Cultural Revolution brought destruction and mass death to the nation.
I hope you're not sick of hearing about China. I love China. I think it's one of the most fascinating countries. 1.3 billion people, an army of 1.6 million, 1.6 million, and an $11 trillion economy. $11 trillion. Imagine having the task of managing that. We look up there and we think, well, gee, you know, you're a great trading partner, very important to us. But when I look up there, I think, just how stable is that? You know, are we going to have a jasmine revolution one day? Well, with the rise of Xi Jinping, maybe not. Joining me now to talk about just that, China's stability and the resistible rise of Xi Jinping, is James Palmer. He's the Asia editor for Foreign Policy and joins me now from China by Skype. James Palmer, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thank you for having me.
James, you're working up there, but when you think about it, do you find that breathtaking? You know, 1.3 billion people, 1.6 million in the army, 11 trillion economy. Managing that must be a nightmare.
Yeah, it is. And I think one of the things that people don't realize is that even the Chinese government itself doesn't know a lot of what goes on in China. The scale of the country is so vast and the sources of information so poor. A lot of the time, even the top people in Beijing themselves are working in the dark.
Well, that's completely understandable. With such a large country, it's very hard to understand what's happening everywhere. I mean, even in Australia, does our Prime Minister or our Cabinet know what's happening at the local government level? No. And we've only got 20 million. If you've got 1.3 billion, it is almost impossible. But they're an interesting example because their constitution, you know, promises freedom of religion, freedom of speech, personal privacy. And, you know, they aren't the first things that come to mind to me. If I was visiting China, I don't think of it as having great religious freedom, certainly not freedom of speech or much in the way of personal privacy.
Well, basically, the constitution in China, at its best, it's an aspirational document. It was first written up in the 1980s after the Cultural Revolution. So at a time when there had been, you know, complete political chaos in China. And it was trying to set new norms for how the system would work. So parts of it were actually enforced, used, like the presidential term limits we'll be talking about later. But a lot of it was just the sort of boilerplate language taken from, for instance, the Soviet constitution. Well, in the same way that, you know, many dictatorships around the world call themselves the People's Democratic Republic,
yep.
The freedom of religion, freedom of speech stuff was more or less shown. Now, there were people in the 2000s, in the early 2010s, who were trying to make that a reality, who were trying to say, we have this constitution, let's give it force, or let's try and strive towards these ideals. But that is more or less gone beside the wayside now. The strength of the government has weakened massively, and the strength of the party, the Communist Party of China, has swollen immensely.
With the change with Xi Jinping, that's come about presumably partly because of his own skills. He's obviously very politically astute. But was he able to apply that astuteness to the times, in fact, suiting him? For example, a real concern within the Chinese leadership generally about the spread of corruption and the instability that might come if they weren't seen to be dealing with it. So that might have allowed him to say, well, I'm going to deal with that, and at the same time use it to cut the power base and or dispose enemies, at least.
That's very true. There were two linked concerns if you were party leader before Xi Jinping in the Hu Jintao era. And they were corruption and the weakening strength of the party, especially against what was seen as outside influences, especially cultural influences. Those were linked together. The corruption undermined the authority of the party because corrupt officials made the party seem like entirely extortive. And in turn, foreign cultural influences were seen as destroying people's faith in the party, faith in its own ability to clean up the corruption. So there was very much a mood that things had gotten too lax on both sides, that they had gotten too lax politically, that they had gotten too lax in anti-corruption enforcement. And Xi was able to very skillfully take advantage of both of these to seize power himself and to elide the differences between his own cause, his own faction, his own self, and the well-being of the party as a whole.
Do, or did, maybe both, people in China worry about an Arab Spring or developments like in the Ukraine in 2014? Was there a concern around that, you know, we really have to get our act together here because we don't want a Jasmine Revolution and we have to therefore clamp down? Do you think they were, the Chinese were looking around the world saying, no, oh, these are risky times, we have to, you know, bring down the hatches a bit?
Absolutely. The Arab Spring in particular terrified them because, you know, these were very long-standing established authoritarian regimes that had crumbled seemingly almost overnight. And the supposed Jasmine Revolution in China, which was basically a social media prank by a few dissidents in other countries, sparked this huge wave of paranoia in response. But they were also very influenced by the growing insurgency in Xinjiang, which is the far west of China, where oppressive measures and long-standing tensions have erupted into a really violent, nasty conflict. And the security state created there, this huge sort of paranoid construction of re-education camps and surveillance and violence and constant crackdowns, that's also been leaking out into the rest of China.
So all of that has created a climate where Xi Jinping's been able to say, well, you know, I'm going to be the leader for as long as I like. And in one sense, they might see that as being a good thing. But in the end, clamping down doesn't always work, does it? I don't know that the nuns at my school knew everything, but I do remember one of them saying that if you hold, pick up some sand at the beach and you hold it really tightly, usually, you know how it runs down in between your palm and your fingers? But if you simply cup it in your hand and it's protected, you'll keep it for longer. And I just worry that clamping down too much in China might have the reverse effect. That is, people don't mind order, they don't mind discipline, but when it's overdone, it just drives the problem underground. And these days with the internet and the capacity for communication that far exceeds anything that was around during the revolution, aren't they taking a sort of risky step, clamping down too far?
I think the real risk is not provoking revolution, but provoking stagnation. So, in fact, the control of communication capabilities here is so strong and the extent of the suppression of the internet and of internet freedoms so massive, particularly in the last 2 years, it's not as if there's going to be a Tahrir Square or a Maidan in Beijing, because at a moment's notice, they will shut off all the mobile phone networks. They have huge numbers of people employed in constantly monitoring social media. Most Chinese internet companies, anything that has a sort of public-facing element, where the public is able to put up, you know, stuff on their platform, whether it's dating sites or, you know, Facebook equivalents, something like a third of their staff is employed in censorship. So what I think you're going to see instead is this real risk of this, like, stagnation of this, of stuff slowing down, because the cost of repression is going to start telling on the economy. It's going to start telling on people's creative abilities. You know, China is this country of 1.3 billion, often brilliant people, that produces virtually no worthwhile culture. Hong Kong revolutionized world cinema with action movies. China hasn't produced anything like that in the last 50, 60 years. because there's this overwhelming kind of culture of mediocrity in creativity, and that's gotten worse and worse and worse under the current repression. So I think what you're looking at is not revolution, but something like the Brezhnev era in the Soviet Union, where just this long, cold freeze settles in over the country. On another note, though, we've already seen effectively a revolution at the top, because the collective leadership of the past, the sense that you had, you know, a group of people in the party working together, has been overthrown and replaced with this increasingly cult-like devotion to Xi Jinping.
So what happens in those circumstances? I can't get into the mentality of someone who's a part of that higher echelon of government. But what happens if one of them just gets a gun and shoots him dead?
Huh. Well,
they're obviously dead. Nobody, I get that. But, you know, stranger things have happened.
Indeed, it happened in South Korea back under the dictatorship. The dictator at the time, I forget his name because Korean is not my language, Gyeon something. He was the father of the president who just got kicked out, just got impeached there. And he was shot dead by, I think, his chief of staff in a quarrel. And that there is, you know, there's no plan. If Xi Jinping, you know, doesn't, never mind get shot, if he dies of a heart attack because of, you know, over banqueting, there's no clear successor. There's nothing in place. And I don't think there's anybody who would have the skill to hold the whole thing together. So you would be looking at a very fraught, very chaotic time whenever he does go.
So do you predict a stable future or instability?
I think we're looking at a China that appears stable because we won't have the information. We won't be able to see the instability that's growing in different places. We won't be able to see the things that will cause big problems. But I think that the emergence of Xi actually means much more long-term instability for China and much more risk.
Just hazarding a guess, I know. I mean, who can know these things? Do you get the feeling, knowing more than many, that he wants to stay for a long time, or is he just setting it up that whoever's leader can stay for a long time?
He absolutely wants to stay for a long time. And in many ways, he has no choice, because the level of measures he's already taken inside the party and the number of enemies that have been made means that he cannot afford for himself to retire. He cannot put himself in a position where he's vulnerable to being taken down. So he's going to have to, like many, keep a very tight grip on power.
I'm laughing, James, not because it's funny, because it's really quite ironical, isn't it, that in some sort of way, here's this guy who's clamping down on corruption, but he knows that this is the proposition you're putting, that if he doesn't stay as leader, the next person might whack him in the slammer, as some people say the Chinese leadership has done to Xi Jinping's rivals.
Well, we have to be very careful, because everybody was corrupt. It was impossible to come up in Chinese politics in the 90s and 2000s without being corrupt. Mm-hmm. Corruption was baked in the system. And with Bo Xilai, the fallen leader of Chongqing, whose fall enabled Xi to, in part, seize in the first place. Now, he came in, actually, Xi's campaign is very much modeled on his. She will never admit this because, you know, obviously Bo is now a fallen figure. But all the measures that she is doing on a national level, Bo was doing on a local level in one very big city. And when he fell, we found out that the supposed anti-corruption measures, the supposed anti-crime measures there, had mostly consisted of putting his own people in charge of the existing criminal enterprises. So, you know, we have to be cautious because a lot of this stuff is obviously wealth is being divvied up almost certainly among different factions. And we just don't know how much genuine cleanness there is. But it certainly creates this massive risk for Xi himself. And in fact, I think if he was really confident in his power, if he was somebody who like Deng Xiaoping in the 1980s, who had this huge revolutionary credibility, who was admired and respected throughout most of the party, though he had enemies, Deng was able to retire, to move back to a position where he had much less formal power, but his informal power and his informal status was so strong that he still effectively ran things. And Xi doesn't seem yet to be in a position to do that.
That would be a good position to be. Well, all in all, the summary of that is, I think that you're not expecting a Jasmine revolution around the corner, but you are saying that there's an instability there that needs to be watched closely.
Yes, I think we really should be thinking of it as like the Soviet Union in the 70s. So, you know, maybe 10, 20 years down the line, the big problems are going to emerge in full. And in China's case, not the same problems as the Soviet Union exactly, but issues like debt buildup, like the demographic shift, the aging population, these are going to have real bite. And the increasing authoritarianism of the system means that these problems are going to end up being kicked down the road, covered up, ignored, rather than confronted, examined, or solved. And with the old collective leadership system, for all its many flaws, it was very good at experimentation. It was very good at looking for solutions on the ground level and then implementing them throughout China. And that's gone. Now what we're seeing is top-down measures, measures coming out of Beijing and being pushed all throughout the country, regardless of local differences or variations in a lot of cases. And I think that too is going to be very dangerous.
James Palmer, Asia Editor, Foreign Policy, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
There you are. Plant jasmine in your garden, smells beautiful. Don't expect a jasmine revolution soon, but get your kids to be ready.